All right, guys. So I'm Kim Brander. I'm the OCX president and social media manager. I just wanted to welcome you to the Health and Freedom event that's hosted by Aura in partnership with OUJIC and GovNet, and as well as the Women's Hospital. Before we start, I want to thank the OCM Club, led by Rabbi Rubin and Shira Blatchman, as well as YAFDA on campus for organizing this event. I also want to mention some of our exciting learning opportunities coming up. Every Tuesday at 12:30, come join Rabbi Lashnik for a Simba Share, where we combine Torah modern day movies for inspirational and practical share, which is tomorrow. Every Wednesday, join us at 12:45 for a Ladle of Inspiration, where we have homemade soup and for the body and for the soul. And every Thursday, we take a deep dive into relationships with Shir Lashnik. And very special for this week, the Israel Club is hosting a exciting Friday night dinner, so we hope you all make it. I would like to now introduce Lauren Zanny, our Yama fellow, to introduce the program, and we hope you enjoy the event.
Hi, everyone. Thank you all for coming, and big thank you to our guests for today. So I just want to tell you a little bit about them. So Atara Steiner is the Assistant Director of Community Outreach at Aura. She graduated from King's College with a degree in Marketing and Communications. Atara works on education and development at Aura, so she leads all the educational programs at Aura, including college fellowships, high school education, and community-wide awareness. She also works on Aura's fundraising and marketing efforts. So a big thank you to Atara for being here. And Abraham Moshe is a passionate Aura volunteer residing in Brooklyn. He is currently a SMEPA student as well as a pre-law student at Yeshiva University. He also interns at the Bet-Din of Rab Eliyahu Ben Chaim in Queens, which is one of Aura's main supporters. So a big thank you to both of them for coming here and teaching us about what is athletic freedom.
Thank you guys so much. I just want to acknowledge everyone on the screen. I'm sorry I don't look at you the whole time, but see you, and if you have any questions, please go through the end. But to all of you guys here, I was just telling everyone I'm so impressed that you're here right now. I don't know if I would have come if I was in college, so really at your call. And yeah, we're going to speak a little bit about the health of freedom, a little bit about get refusal, Ahuna. We're going to define all these terms, and hopefully you'll really learn the foundation of Jewish marriage, Jewish divorce, and you'll be able to really advocate on behalf of the entire Jewish community. So we're going to start off with kind of, you know, a fun question. So you've seen weddings, you've seen movies. So what, right before the, you know, the wedding ceremony is finished, what's the last phrase that, you know, the officiant says? Your job. Almost. Civil ceremony. I'll give a quick hit. Yeah, go ahead. Perfect. No. More of a civil ceremony. So it's by the power vested in me in the state of New York, I now pronounce you husband-in-law. So that is kind of, you know, a silly phrase. We think it doesn't really have too much meaning, but it really does have a lot of impact into what a civil marriage is and how it relates to a Jewish marriage in opposed to a civil marriage. So we're going to skip to the next slide, please. Okay, one more. I'm sorry. Thanks. So we'll see a couple of different ways a civil ceremony differs from a halachic ceremony. So this will really give a framework between what happens in a Jewish divorce versus a civil divorce. So in a civil marriage, marriage license issued by the state. So two people want to get married, they go to the state, and the state says, sure, you are able to get married, we give you permission to get married, you're going to go ahead and get a license, you'll have, you know, a couple witnesses, and you'll sign this document saying that the state allows you to get married. Same thing happens with divorce. Two people decide, unfortunately, they no longer want to be married. So what's going to happen? They're going to go to a judge. The judge says, okay, I allow you to get divorced. Now we have no-fault divorce. But before, you really had to have a reason to get divorced. And the reason wasn't between you two. It was by the judge. So let's go over to halacha. So in a Jewish marriage, it really works the opposite way. And if you think about it, it's actually a lot more equitable. So in halacha, two people decide they want to get married. And that's really it. They don't need permission from anyone else. We do have a misdemeanor execution. We do have witnesses. But by Torah law, you don't need any of these things to get married. You don't even need a ketubah. There's no ketubah in the Torah, actually. And the same thing happens when you get divorced, and this is really important. So two people decide they want to get married, they're able to get married, and two people decide they want to get divorced. Now they decide themselves that they want to get divorced. So this, you know, seems like a pretty equitable system. But in reality, it can cause a lot of interesting problems, right? Because the people themselves need to decide that they agree to get divorced, and the process has to go smoothly. So we're going to talk about what is an Ahuna. I'm sure you guys have heard this more than once. So I'll open it up to you a little bit. Go ahead.
Right, so the Mishnah in Kiddushin teaches
of the methods of how a woman is binding a marriage. After that happens, the Mishnah teaches that there's two ways of how a woman can remarry moving forward. One way is when the husband gives her a bill of divorce, and the second way is if the husband dies. This brings us to the discussion of the aguna. It used to be that an aguna, in the times of the Gemara, was a woman that her husband just banished wartime or at sea, and therefore we didn't know if he's dead, and therefore she could remarry, or we didn't have the ability to have the husband write her bill of divorce because his location is unknown. These days, the modern day aguna is typically where we know where the husband is, he's alive, he's doing well, but he just refuses to give his wife a bill of divorce for discussions that Tara is going to mention in a little bit.
So yes, there's two types of aguna. If I've already said, there's the classical type and then there's the modern type. So we're going to speak a little bit more about the modern type of aguna, the ones we're really looking to prevent here. So what happens when a woman is an aguna? So really, what happens when a woman is an aguna? So she can't get married, she can't have kids, anything else that you could skip back to in a second. Any ideas from you guys, like, how might being an aguna affect a woman on a daily basis?
She can't get remarried.
Can't get remarried, yeah. That's a really hard one. Any other ideas? Come on, she was hoping you guys were
going to
be like, she can't date, yeah, exactly, same thing. And I would say, like, within that, there's a sense of identity that comes within the Jewish community. And when you're single, you go to single events. When you're married, you know, you go to certain things. And when you're, you know, have kids, you're able to go to, you know, other places and have other social interactions. And when you kind of have no identity, you're not living with a person. You might even be simply divorced from a person, but you're still attached to them. You're still paying to them. So even having that lack of identity is really harmful for a woman. And it really feels a lot of harmful consequences. Anything else that you guys might think of that impacts women, you know, daily? Yeah?
I'm not so sure what parts for the kids, but I'm sure that, like, it's hard to explain to them that their father is who work that way, and they have to be able to their father in the music.
That's a really, really good point. It might affect the kids, right? If the kids are dealing with this and seeing this on a daily basis, and they see their mother being trapped and their, you know, their father not being so nice, it can really affect them. Yeah, you see on just many different levels, even from a financial level, you're simply divorced from a person, you are no longer, sharing, you know, custody most of the time, you're no longer sharing assets, and it becomes a really big fight where you're chained to this person, and you're no longer living with them, and you're yourself, right? And just another point I want to point out is that when we say a woman didn't get her get for 2 years, so we're able to look back and say, okay, so she was not good enough for 2 years, it's terrible, but she got her get. When you're in this moment and you're being, you know, chained to a marriage that's no longer, you know, alive, basically, you don't know when that's going to end. And that pressure of daily waking up and feeling stuck and feeling chained really takes a toll emotionally. So we've seen it's really not a good situation for women to be labeled as an aguna. So why might someone withhold the get? Like, why would someone do this to somebody else? Go ahead. Spite. It's a good one.
They don't want the divorce. They think the marriage is perfect in their head.
It's a great point. They think the marriage is perfect, right? They love that.
Control.
It's a great point. Yeah.
Pride.
Sorry.
Like pride.
Pride, ego. Yeah. So we'll switch to the next slide. And these are the four things that we see at Orem most often of why a husband would refuse to give again. So the first two I'll explain, the ones in red, is extortion, which is so sad, but we see most often. You know, you give me the get. You give me $5 million and I'll give you the get. Or we see it, you know, even, you know, on a smaller scale. You give me the house, you give me this, you give me that, I'll give you the get. So it's basically he has the power in his hand to demand whatever he wants, and she, you know, essentially is forced to give it to him if she wants her get in this case. The other one is custody. This one's also really, really devastating because, you know, we're fighting for the kids. You love your kids. But, you know, a lot of times we're fighting in civil court at the same time as we're fighting in Houston, and, you know, once a judge issues a ruling on custody, it's really hard to change that. And if a husband is telling the woman, I'm only going to give you your get once the custody arrangement changes, that gets really difficult as well. So again, just using this get as a power and control tactic over the woman in this area. Despite something said, you know, she doesn't deserve a divorce. She, you know, she'll never get a divorce. We've actually had, unfortunately, men come into the incident and say, I'm never giving you a get until you're too old to have kids. Again, just like spite and heart and, you know, whatever, you know, didn't work out in the marriage is now coming out now. And we actually say, with all these things, get delay is actually a really big deal. If you start out a divorce process and the get is given right away, it, you know, gets done and finished with before any of these other things come into play, before we discuss assets, before we discuss custody and all these things, So it's really important the timing we get as well. And the last one is love, which is a really hard one to discuss because he really believes that, you know, he loves her, and he really believes that Shalom Bayis and marriage in the Jewish community is a really, really big deal, which it is. But, you know, we believe at Ura that, you know, if a woman or a man wants to, you know, wishes to leave their marriage, they should be able to do so, whether or not the other one feels any feelings towards them. So all of these things have one thing in common. Someone actually mentioned it, but I want to really pull it out of you guys. What is the common theme between all these things? Yeah, go ahead.
Power and control.
Power and control. It's a really good point. And when you think of power and control, what's another word that comes to mind? What do you think of that?
Greed.
Yeah. And that, yeah. So we'll skip to the next slide.
Selfishness.
It's a great point. So we think of abuse. So I don't throw around the word abuse lightly. This is not something that, you know, I label different things, you know, on a whim. So what abuse is, it's a domestic abuse is a pattern of controlling behavior. So I really want to make this super clear also, that this is not somebody who wakes up one day, wants to receive their get, and that person says, like, wait a second, like, can we talk about this? Or, wait a second, like, let's give it a day or two. This is a pattern of controlling behavior. So this is a pattern over and over, asserting power, control, dominance over, you know, the husband or the wife over the other. And this is, like, a culmination of all things that have happened in the marriage. So I just want to make that super clear. It's about obtaining control and over a partner. And the get is often the last threat of this control. Thanks so much.
It usually doesn't go from, like, 1 to 100. Usually there's a bunch of, like, steps that lead to this kind
of thing. It's a great point. Yeah.
So we've just seen that the refusal to give a get is a form of spousal abuse, and we keep power and control over a woman to prevent her from moving on with her life. We've also seen that at times some of these recalcitrant husbands abuse their wives by refusing to give a get unless their wives provide them with their wishes in the custody or with their money according to their liking. The process of such divorce is hard on two fronts. First, it's hard to navigate the legal aspects, especially when there is a financial or custodial disputes. Secondly, and more importantly, halakhically, only a husband can give a get, as we mentioned before, and that get from the husband must be deliberate of his free will. Therefore, a get given under duress or force, which is known as a get merusa, is void. This is where Ora steps in, with the goal to eliminate such abuse from the divorce process. Ora works to help the Aguna navigate both Jewish law and civil law to advocate for a get's timely and unconditional issuance. We will now discuss a few ways of how Ora pressures, both legally and halakhically, a husband to give his wife a divorce. So Shulchan Aruch, the code of Jewish law, established in the 1560s and still used as a primary halakhic reference work until today, cites two opinions about the extent of pressure that may be applied to secure a get for an Aguna. This may not sound very politically correct for this day and age, but they argue whether we need force such a husband through whips and beatings. So remember, simply refusing to get a get may not seem violent or physically threatening, but if you think about it, it definitely could be categorized as a clear form of abuse that can have devastating effects on the life of Aguna, suffering from it at its mercy. However, the Ramah, in his gloss on Shulchan Aruch, comments, since there is an argument among the rabbis, it's proper to be stringent, not to coerce with whips, so it should not be a forced get. He continues, we may, however, declare on every Jew not to do him any favor, to do business with him, to circumcise his children, or bury him until he divorces. This is what we commonly call a shtar siruv, which is a document of contempt issued by a bezdin to compel action against an individual. Ramah teaches that we should not force a husband with physical harm, as that is a dispute between the rabbis, but we may pressure him by socially distancing him to a point where he feels uncomfortable and pressured to divorce his wife. Ramah then concludes with the words, and a bezdin may add any stringency of this type. This is the basis of Ora's strategies, creative strategies, after having been unsuccessful reaching out to the recalcitrant parties to try to sold out a get for the Aguna. Examples include social media campaigns, handing out and hanging out flyers, and conducting peaceful demonstrations. These often bring the husbands to the table, causing him to no longer change his wife. Ora's activities are guided by both great rabbinic leaders, some who happen to be my own mentors in Rabbeim, as well as several top lawyers. They ensure that Ora deals with these husbands within the scope of halacha, Jewish law, and civil law, with the ultimate goal of freeing any future chained woman from being able to move on with her life.
But there's a solution, and that's really why we're here today. So everyone can, like, decide to leave. We are going to talk about the law of prenup. So, like Adam Moshe said, there are a number of ways that Orah helps these women. Like, I'm sure you've seen on social media. I'm sure you've seen, you know, posters being hanged around. But on some level, it still has to be the husband who gives his wife a gift. There's no way to force him. There's no way, you know, because we live in America, there's a separation of church and state, and we can't, you know, freeze their bank accounts or put them in jail because they don't give them a gift. So on some level, it still has to be the husband who gives his wife a gift. So that's where the halachic prenup comes in. And we're going to break it down a little bit, and I want to hear all of you guys' questions. There's a lot of, you know, some controversy, some reasons, you know, people might not want to sign. So we're going to go through it super quickly, just so you know what you're signing. If you have any friends who are, like, hesitant or want to learn more, hopefully you'll be able to really break it down for them. So we're going to move forward. So there are two pieces to the halachic prenup. We're going to go through them quickly. The first one is a binding arbitration agreement. Do we have any pre-law students? Yeah? You want to explain what arbitration is, or you'd rather not?
I'll do it. It's fine.
Amazing.
A couple different forms of arbitration, but it basically means that you bring, if there's a dispute between two parties, you'll bring it to a third outside party that will decide what the outcome should be on whatever set of guidelines they decide.
Yeah, that was perfect. So arbitration, where you bring it to a third party. Yeah, that was great. Yes. So when we're discussing the issue of a debt, which is what we're discussing, we are having a binding arbitration agreement, which is where we decide, we predetermine beforehand, before you get married, or we'll speak about it if you're already married, what happens then. But, you know, we decide beforehand which beats in we're going to discuss the issue of a get in. Why is it so important? Because in halacha, in Jewish law, any three men can become a beis din. So we have a lot of korach that's even, you know, if the get refuser, you know, has three buddies and he wants to appoint them as his beis din, and the wife wants another reason, likely a more reputable beis din, we get into this, you know, problem where we don't have a beis din, right? And it's something called a zavla, which is where one will appoint, you know, one dayan, one will appoint another one, and then they'll appoint a third one, and it gets very messy, and this can take, honestly, like, years. And a woman will not be named an aguna all the time because there isn't even a beis din process to discuss this. Like Avram said, there has to be a seira, which is an official document against the husband that's saying he refused to come to beis din. But if we're still deciding which beis din to go to, then he's not really a get refuser, she's not really an aguna, but it can take years for them to actually start the process of divorce. So from the get-go, we decide we're going to go to a certain beis din. The prenup and postnup that we recommend is the RCA prenup, which states the beis din of America, which is a huge and reputable beis din, as a beis din to go to. So you are going to sign, you know, on this line that you're going to go to the beis din of America to discuss the issue of the get. We have lawyers, obviously, there. We have psychologists, obviously, big or bang, that are on the beis din of America. So it's a pretty good one to go to. And the second, thanks so much. You can go one more, thanks so much. And the second piece, which maybe you guys have heard is a little more common, is a support obligation. So what that means is that if a husband refuses to give his wife a get, or if a woman refuses to accept the get, whoever is being recalcitrant, who's refusing, will have to pay their spouse $150 a day until the get is given, until the divorce is complete. So really, you know, makes it that no one really wants to lose that much money. It equals about $54,000 a year. And it's put in here that we are signing right now that if I'm refusing to get, or if you're refusing to accept to get, we will have to pay each other. And the reason this is so cool and it's so important is it really brings civil law and Jewish law together, where the civil courts can actually enforce this document, whereas they couldn't necessarily enforce the ketubah. So we really bring those two things together. Thanks so much. Okay. So why sign the prenup? Let's just bring it out. Let's make everything super clear. Then we'll discuss a little bit more of the nitty-gritty. But, like, you know them? Sorry, love you? No.
She's cute.
It is cute. Why are you signing for now?
Do you want to protect your spouse?
Yeah, you want to protect your spouse. It's a good point. Go ahead.
You have to be normal in the community. You know, even if you feel confident in your own relationship, you know, there's other people that are getting married and don't want to destigmatize it.
That's a great point. You want to make it normal, right? We always say, you know, if you're signing a prenup because you think your future husband's going to be an abuser, you don't need a prenup, you need a new fiance, right? Like, we always tell people that. Like, this is not for you. This is not because you think you're going to need it. This is not, you know, because you have red flags. Really, we can talk about it. And we also like to say that you are not giving up any civil liberties. We're not giving up anything when you sign the prenup except the ability to be a jerk later. That's really what we say. Because what you're saying is, in the issue that we have to discuss to get, you know, we're going to go to a bar and we'll beat them. Like, what could be more... You know, we want to be better than that. So we really say, and I'll mention here because we're going to go through it. There are two optional sections that you can sign when you sign the the binding arbitration agreement. If you want to write here that you want to discuss assets or custody in the Basin of America, you're able to do that right here. If you don't sign it, you're able to do that later in Basin, or you have the opportunity to do it in civil court also. So the last thing that I want to just talk about with you guys and what I feel like all of your questions is really what a prenup express is. And this is what I really want to, you know, really, if you remember one thing from this program, it would be this, that the prenup is not about Hollywood, it's not about money, it's not about everything you hear when you hear the word prenup. It's a sign of respect, it's a sign of love, it's a sign of whatever happens in this relationship, I want you to be protected. It's the wife saying that to the husband saying that to the wife, and no matter what, I want you to be safe from even myself. And we've had cases, unfortunately, where people develop mental illness, people get into a car crash, you know, and really are impacted mentally, and they can no longer function in marriage, but it ends up being a case of their refusal, and that was never, you know, a red flag in the beginning of the marriage, but it happens, and with a prenup, that can all be avoided, and it's a sign of just respect and love, and it's not just a respect and love to your partner, but it's to the entire Jewish community, right? So if you decide that me and my friends and my whole college campus are not going to get married without a prenup because I want everyone to be safe. And if all of my friends are signing a prenup and my friend gets engaged and her fiance doesn't want to sign it, either that's a red flag and we should talk about it. It doesn't mean the relationship needs to end. It just means we need to have a conversation about it. And a lot of times, it's not, you know, this guy is a, you know, a secret abuser. It's just he lacks education or she lacks education. Once we, you know, explain what the prenup is and how not scary the prenup is, it will really help them understand that this is just to protect you and to protect the Jewish community. And, you know, like Lauren said, it creates the safety for everyone, that if everybody signs it, the, you know, X percent that are going to need it will already have it and it'll be a no-brainer. So we'll skip a little bit. We went through that. So we went through this also. Thanks so much. Okay. So this is kind of where I want to get, this is kind of where I want to get your questions. First of all, anything that I said, I would love to hear your feedback, but if it's so obvious to everyone here, obviously to me, it's so obvious to sign a prenup, why doesn't everyone sign it, or what do you guys think would hinder you or somebody you know from signing
that? I heard that there's some sort of, like, people think that there's some sort of halakhic issues with it, but I think the thing is they don't know if there's a halakhic version that is, you know, backed by rabbis, and I think that they think that when they follow a rabbi that doesn't hold by it.
It's a great point. Yeah, so we believe there are halakhic issues. Like Avram said, a get is forced, then it's not kosher, it doesn't matter. So none of this will even matter if we feel like the get is forced. So some people say, you know, the support obligation, if you force someone to pay $150 a day, then you're forcing them, right? So we really take that language really from the ketubah, and the Rambam discusses it, that when you get married and you have a ketubah, you are saying, I will support my wife with clothing, with mezonos, with food, you know, all those things. So we're really just translating that. Okay, if you want to stay married and you want to have a Jewish marriage, you still need to support her, you still need to provide her with all these things, so we're just making that a little bit more civil. So that's the force aspect, and I'll say another thing is that we said that you have to go to a basin, right? So you can change it to a different basin. Let's say you don't want the basin of America, let's say you live in Chicago, and you live at the Chicago basin, so you can always change it to that one. And people, like you said, just don't know that. So yeah, it's a great point.
Go ahead. I would guess that maybe some people think it's a non-Jewish custom and they're very, very afraid of anything that might be
enough. Totally. Prenup, right? Like Hollywood, and like, you don't touch that. And also, like, changing customs in Jewish culture is very scary, right? Like, the more we change, the further away we get from the Torah. So, I would say it's definitely something that we hear. Do you want
to
answer?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's important to realize that this prenup is based actually in the Kitzur Nachashiva, that the oldest compendium of Jewish documents. And it's based on the tradition that was present already on the Rabbi based prenup. So that it's not something new, it's actually a good 300, 400 years old.
Yeah.
And also, if I'm not mistaken, there are on the Sephardic side, there are Moroccan Tanaim that also have the same thing. Also, if I'm not mistaken, Ramesh, one of the great Moroccan decisors, also noted that this was the custom in Morocco in bygone years as well.
Yeah, and I would even say for the ketubah, like, you know, that wasn't always around. It was made to protect women as well. A man can't just take a woman as his wife and then discard her and upset. He's now required to care for her, to provide for her. So, you know, things evolve, and this is one of them. And it will take time until it becomes normal, but this is what we're going to do. I'm going to take a couple questions from the Zoom topic.
I have a few questions in the chat, so I don't think you're going to address this, but can you still sign it after you're married?
That is a wonderful question. We're going to get to that. Yes. So the answer is 100% yes, as opposed to a prenup, it's a postnup, right? So it's, you know, it will hold up the same in court. It's the same type of document I have here, if anyone wants to see afterwards. Basically, it just says, you know, instead of husbands to be, it says husband, and it's we encourage everyone to sign it, because the same way, if we make it a social norm, and we actually have you know, pictures of 75-year-old couples, it's adorable, signing post up, and obviously, you know, I shouldn't say obviously, but in their case, it was never, we think we're going to divorce, that's our signing a prenup. It was a statement. It was, a showing of the community and showing themselves that we respect you, and yeah, go ahead.
Sharon and I did it also. We signed the post up.
We had a similar program, how many years?
At Kingsway.
Wow.
At Kingsway, and we signed a post up as well to give that same message.
Yeah, it's really that much just for the community. And
okay, so a few more questions. Someone in the chat said, I've heard that people feel it can be potentially eyeing Hira and Hasbisha along with doing the marriage before it even began. What would you say to this?
That's also a really great question. If everyone heard it, it's an eyeing Hira, it's unromantic, it's like a weird thing to talk about before you get married. We definitely hear that a lot. What we will say is it's the opposite, really. It's really a show of love and respect. And if you're willing to put that on paper, that says a lot. That says a lot going into the marriage, feeling a sense of security and saying, whatever happens and whatever issues we have to deal with, like I said, like it's going to happen when you're protected and when we're protected. And, like, couples will likely sign the document, they'll give it to us, we scan it, we put it in our registry, and they forget that it even happened. And, I would say it's not bringing that negative energy into the marriage. If anything, it's bringing a positive energy. And usually it's not an issue.
I would add that it's similar to tshuva, just like tshuva is in Aramaic, and people don't realize that it's exactly the same word as when it's just in English. So people tend to feel that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Lily asks in the chat, how do I clear the misconceptions that it's not about money?
It's a great question. Yeah. It's funny. We call it the healthy prenup, all these things, but it actually never says the word prenup in the document. It's the binding arbitration agreement. So that is, we've tried to rebrand it a couple times, but the prenup, people just understand they have to do it before marriage and you need a witness and all these things. So there's a lot of sections that really break it up from a regular prenup. So it's not about money. When you're signing it, you're not saying anything about what assets you have now versus what assets you have at the divorce, God forbid. It's just saying, it has a support obligation, but it's just based on what you would already be spending in your marriage, right? So Jewish life is expensive. Probably you're going to spend $150 or something like that a day. So it's really, the money piece is just as a protection. I would say you don't need a lawyer to sign this at all. Like, you don't need to write it up and have all your different assets and all your different money involved. It really takes 5 minutes. Come to our office, if you're here. You need a notary, you need 2 witnesses, and that's it, and it's done.
And someone asked, where can I access the document?
Great question. So you can go to getora.org. You can just even Google the Halakha Prenup. We have the reciprocal version on our website, whereas that if either party is recalcitrant, they'll have to pay that money. Super accessible. You can then send it back to Ora. We'll process it for you. The Beats of America also has a copy in case, God forbid, you need it. It's pretty painless. Like I said, it takes under 5 minutes. I'll take one from the crowd and we'll get back to that. Yeah, so the question is why $150? So it's a great question.
If we're trying to prevent any abuse or delay, why not make it $1,000 or $1 million?
Yeah, more? It's a great question. Why not make it more? $5 million to prevent abuse. Like, anybody would sign that, right, if you're in a healthy relationship. So it's funny, we actually had a call recently of somebody who wanted to raise the amount. $150 a day, like, they're both going to be lawyers. Like, they're going to make way more than that. And it's true. So, like we said, ORA works within the parameters of halakha and civil law. So, civilly, it's like any other contract. You can raise the amount to whatever you want. The problem happens with the halakha piece of it, because it's based on the ketubah and based on how much a husband actually owes his wife, that's really where that number comes from. It's really complicated halakha to change that number, and this fluctuates. Like, it includes like inflation, and it will go up, as time goes on. But yeah, no, really, like, it's adjusted for inflation. Like, how much a normal family, would spend. Obviously, a little bit more in New York and today, but it really is based on halakha sources. I'm not gonna say you can never change the number because some people do, but it's really complicated and would involve a lot of forbidden input. Go ahead.
Just wondering, are there organizations in Israel that also do this that have the prenup and you can also go to the whatever they send one?
It's a great question. Yeah. So are there organizations like this in Israel, and is there a document in Israel, right, that you can take to both courts? Israel's different because Israel, there really is no separation of church and state. So, Israel or Israeli governments can actually freeze your assets, can take you in jail for being a gay abuser. I don't know the policy so much because I work in America, but it's a little bit different in Israel, and there is an Israeli prenup that you can
accept. And would they accept if you did prenup here, would they accept it?
Great question. Like, if someone's planning on making Aliyah, which one should they accept? It's a great question. So what we recommend to people is that if you want to make Aliyah in the future but don't really have a plane ticket or don't really have, like, you're enrolled in school, we do recommend signing the American version and signing another one there. The issue would be signing both of them at the same time, but we would recommend, unless you really have a flight, to sign here. There's different ones. Like, Canada has different ones. California's version is a little bit different. Like, prenups, California, that's what we think of. So, like, there's a lot of laws of prenups in general in California, so it took a long time, but it's just slightly different. It's really nothing. You need to develop. But it's a great question. That's what we're all doing. Yeah. Go ahead.
So, just to confirm, this doesn't cover everything. Like, in theory, a person could still be recalcitrant even after this and just pay the $50,000, right?
100%. If someone's a billionaire, like, $50,000 is, like, trash them, right? I'd rather hurt my wife who's hurt me than pay this money. It's a great question. Honestly, there's no great answer because it's true. The husband has to give the wife the get, you know, willingly. I will say, even rich people love their money, and we've seen that. Like, they really don't like spending it and wasting it. The other thing I'll say is that we'll never say this works 100% of the time, right? What we will say is that we've had multiple calls where a Tawain, which is basically a lawyer in Dayton, will call us and, you know, harass us on the phone and be like, you just wait, we're going to get into Dayton, we're going to extort you, we're going to do all these things. And then we say, okay, like, we're happy to go, just so you know, there's a whole lot of prenup, so it will hold up in court. And they'll be like, there's a prenup? Like, you didn't tell me that. Like, just never mind. Like, I'm dropping the case. So we see more often than not it being, you know, tested in court. More often than not, we see, like, it's not even worth it. Like, we've seen it work. We know that, you know, if someone's been closing a get and there's a prenup, the media's going to be all over it. It's really not going to look good for you. So, yeah. But it's a good question because, like you said, like, if you want to hurt somebody, you can find a way to do it. Unfortunately. This is a great conversation. Yeah, go ahead.
Someone in the chat asked, you know, why can't we do something more radical? You know, if the Bet Dean of America has this, you know, great vested power, how come they can't just, you know, make it a law that everyone has to give a get if one party wants it or just another marriage?
It's a really great question, and it's so hard to answer, and it's something we hear a lot. Like, are you kidding me? Like, do you know what it's like for an African to live every single day, be chained to a dead marriage, and to be, you know, struggling back and forth, civil court, you know, halacha, you know, beaten, and it's crazy. Like, just do something already. And it's something we really hear a lot, and it's about slow change, I would say. So even the fact that a lot of rebbeim say, you know, we won't marry you unless you sign a prenup is already a statement in the right direction. And we hope that all rebbeim will say that, and all officiating rabbis, whether they be Reformed, Conservative, Orthodox, Secular, Sephardi, Ashkenaz, everyone, to say, we're going to sign a prenup, and that will hopefully meet that universal change that we're looking for. Because we do have to work with the halakha. You know, it's hard. Like, we always ask, like, why do good things happen to bad people? And why did Hashem set up the system? Like, he almost put in a system where abuse is easy, kind of, you know, right? So why would Hashem do that, and why can't we change that? So it really just goes back to, this is what it says in the Torah, and there has to be some sort of process, right? Because we don't have a judge, like I said, like in civilly, letting you get divorced, basically, because it's two people coming together to get married and two people coming together to get divorced, there has to be some sort of system, right? It has to be one person gives it to the other. So, unfortunately, people abuse that system, and it's not the system's fault. It's the people who abuse the system who really need to change, and really there needs to be reform around that. And hopefully the prenup will do that, but it's slow. It's a slow process, and Ora has only been around for 20 years. So hopefully when we look hundreds of years in the future, pretty much Jeff will be here and this won't be an issue, but God forbid it's not. He's not. Hopefully this will be an institutional change, and it won't be an issue. I know it's a hard question, and there's no good answer.
Yeshivish, do you know anything about the prenup that's more
right?
The Yeshivish community, anything about that?
I saw
something that came out on that.
It's in the works. It's gone through a lot of changes. And also, I'll say the prenup that we recommend goes through a lot of changes. We're getting there. I would say, you know, we're getting there. And I would say about 20% of older callers are from that, you know, I'm not going to generalize, but more right-wing, definitely Hasidish communities. And it's hard to say, you know, abuse doesn't happen in that community or get refusal doesn't happen. It definitely does. They are a little bit more resistant to the RCA's prenup, but they're creating their own version. And it's, like I said, it takes time, but we're definitely working on it, and we work with cases there. And hopefully as more cases, more people talk about it and are open about sharing their stories, it will make a more communal impact.
I just want to say one thing.
Yeah.
People should be careful what based in they use. Like, do your research. Because I've heard some crazy stories about people that say not from the Yeshivish community going to a much more Yeshivish based in,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't even their community. So
just
do your research, do your homework, and
definitely true. There's a lot of buses that are just corrupt or don't really know how to deal with issues like this. Like, of course, I recommend the Beast of America. Like, they're awesome. Like, they're really, really amazing. And like you said, yeah, do your research and come to Aura if you have any questions about Beast in general. We have a lot of connections interns at a very reputable Beast in. So you can direct you to that. Yeah, it's a complicated issue, but it's so important that, you know, that everyone knows it so that we really protect ourselves and everyone else. Yeah. Any more questions in the chat?
Okay,
awesome. I have a couple of brochures, flyers, just about the cleanup that I want to get out to you guys. You take it and share it with your friends, and if anyone wants to see the cleanup post-nup, I'm happy to go through it with you while students are interested. But you guys were fantastic. I'm like, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much for coming.